Does income tax accounting, do we have a need for change?
Good afternoon. The income tax team, the different team from other team that you discussed this morning on the topic of uncertain tax position. We are working on long-term research project to consider whether we should continue refund tax accounting or not. As I said, long term, so we don't plan to change anything in short term. We are very, very early stage. At this stage, we are basically trying to understand where problem exists, what the user needs, what the preparer needs, and what the feasible option would be. So, before my start with begin presentation, I'd like to thank you very much, many of you who completed pre-meeting survey. Information you provided us is very useful in order to prepare for this meeting, as well as for us to prepare a research paper that we plan to publish later this year. In today's session, we would like to cover three things. First, we would like to understand how companies management use tax information internally. This is important, I think, because in many cases, information that company management use is also useful for users. If the user wants certain tax information, but the company management don't use those information, you will have to consider the cost benefit for providing those information. Secondly, today we would like to understand where you think problem exists in today's accounting for income tax. We talked to CSAC members Friday last week, and we were told some areas that users want changed. If the area that preparer feels problem exists is the same as area that user feels problem, there's a strong case to make an improvement. If there's a conflicting view, we have to explore further whether such change is really needed or not. So therefore, we would like to hear where you think progress exists. And lastly, in order to proceed our project, we would like to get a sense of which direction you advise us we should go forward, whether you think we should just improve disclosure without changing principles to current standard, or you think we should consider changing fundamental principles to account for income tax. In slide 7 of agenda paper, we have listed some alternative approaches that other bodies such as IFRA or FASB previously discussed. And today's session, we don't intend to choose which one is the best. We don't intend to discuss which one is the best, but we provide this sort of information because some of you raised some issues. Those issues may not be solved in the context of our current standard income tax, but may be able to solve if we take other approaches. So this is just for information, but we may consider if we want to solve your problem. So Grace, from now on, Grace will present the result of survey and also ask some questions.
In the previous meeting that we conducted in January, we asked two questions. One is how tax information is used by internal management, and the second is preparing the financial statements, or the major problems that trouble you. We have conducted a similar investor survey to the CMAT members, and the result was discussed last Friday. And from the discussion with CMAC members, we understand that investors have this very strong desire to obtain segmental or geographical tax information. But from slides 10 to 13, which are the summary of the results of the GPM survey, we have a sense that preparers mainly use tax information when only evaluating the performance of the tax department or the overall performance of a company. But when you're evaluating segment performance, it's generally use of pre-tax information. Our first question is whether our understanding about how tax information used is correct, and can you explain how segmental or geographical tax information is managed, or to what extent will it be available for disclosure?
Okay, before I open the floor, can I check if Sandra is on the phone now? Okay, any comments to this question? Kevin?
Just slightly off your point, but it was interesting to note in your slides that none of us thought tax rate reconciliation was useful. And I think because of Whitman's global areas, reconciling to a home country tax rate when you operate in multinationals definitely doesn't provide useful information. I know for us to do a tax to do a tax paid per of our segments wouldn't be too difficult, but to ask us to do it at every geographic that we work in, no. That becomes far too onerous, and is definitely also not useful.
Can I comment on that? Because I remember when that disclosure was first put in, and the users who were on the board at the time made the point that what was important to them was not so much the actual rate that was used there, whether it was, you know, weighted average or the parents or whatever it might be, but what was important to them was understanding what the reconciling items were, because they would use that in their estimates of future cash flows and to try and understand what was going to happen in the future.
But say for us, 80% of our operations are foreign.
But that's fine. What they're interested in is this kind of non-standard items that are going to affect the tax rates in the future. So it's not so much whether you've struggled coming up with a weighted average or whether you use the parent or whatever it might be. It's the reconciling items that are probably going to be there. That was the message we were given at the time.
So what's driving the deferred tax balance?
No, it's not deferred tax. Centrally, it's understanding things that don't have a kind of standard effect on the tax rate.
But maybe then disclosure of what is a main impact on the effective tax rate is more useful than a reconciliation. Because then you can say, okay, plus it's determined by geographic split and other indicators, maybe that is then the way forward.
I can tell you, Kevin, I would disagree with you. Not because I'm interested in all kinds of information, but the industry that Malcolm has been involved with one I filed for several years, and I got to tell you, after about 6 to 12 months being new to it, I finally figured out why the valuations and the multiples of this industry, big pharma, were so high in the United States. And yeah, it's true, they're truly innovative companies, they make great science, they are great manufacturing firms, they're great marketers, but they have an advantage that a lot of other companies don't have. And that was the ability to take a significant amount of their earnings and park it in lower tax jurisdictions. And it's legal, you know, it's permissible under US income tax law. But that difference in the valuation of that company, when the marginal top tax rate is 35%, and these companies are somewhere between 15 and 25 from year to year, that's a lot of earnings. You put a multiple on that, and you got a significant valuation differential. So it's a real meaningful piece of information. Just that reconciliation, it jumps out at you with neon lights if you're reading the financial statements.
But doesn't that only impact if you're a worldwide taxpayer? Like, I'm not a worldwide taxpayer, so my tax in that foreign jurisdiction is taxpayer.
But you might have a unique issue in your industry. You know, you might have a tax holiday for some major piece of your operations that could contribute to a much lower effective tax rate. So it's hard to generalize. You can't just say, you know, it doesn't apply to people who don't have national or multinational operations.
Okay, Maria?
We actually evaluate the performance of our segments after tax. So we certainly look at the segments after tax, and I think our users look at the segments after tax on the basis that they are concerned around the effective tax rate. Like how they get that information might be different. I'm not sure they necessarily get it from the reconciliation, but certainly it is something they focus on. So I just want to make that clarification because it made it sound like nobody looks at after-tax in an organization. Now, if there are tax strategies at play that are organizationally monitored, like driven, you may put it in a segment that is not specific, but it's in the corporate center. But I don't think that you would not accept the value that is in each segment. I mean, we get to go to the extremes of creating a non-GAAP measure for the segment reporting that produces a taxable equivalent basis for analysis, right? Which financial institutions do so. So I wouldn't say that we don't look at income tax.
Can I make a comment regarding the first half of this slide? I have a comment on page 7. I don't hope for a big change in some company. So I welcome a minor improvement and this graphic treatment. And regarding the slide of 7, the valuation adjustment approach is not the, in my view, alternative. It's a matter of presentation. The US GAAP, it is a temporary difference approach. At the same time, they use a valuation adjustment approach. So in my view, if we do not want a big change, we should stay a temporary difference approach. But in my view, the convergence with the US GAAP is very useful. So as you know, FASB announced the exposure draft regarding the presentation of income tax assets in long-term non-current section. So that's a convergence. And I think topic of improvement is regarding the valuation approach. I think if you use the valuation adjustment approach, that will improve the disclosure. You use a net approach. The valuation approach has a much useful information. That's one section for improvement. And another section for improvement, the US GAAP provide a guidance for assessing for the valuation allowance. IFRS have a limited guidance. So that's another area for improvement. And thirdly, as you proposed in exposure draft 2014, you have a question regarding the probable future taxable profit against which deductible temporal difference are assessed for utilization. That is an area which is not clear. That's my suggestion. Okay.
Can I just ask for clarification there? Because he also was talking about valuation adjustment approach on slide 7. I don't think that's the same as the question of whether the deferred tax is the US approach or the IFRS approach. The IFRS approach is you recognize if the deferred tax asset is probable. The US approach is you always recognize, but you recognize valuation adjustment on the deferred tax. I think what slide 7 is talking about is, do you recognize deferred tax as a separate liability or asset, or do you view it as part of the measurement of the underlying assets or the liability? So I think it's a slightly different issue.
Okay. Sure. Just a few comments. You know, for the reconciliation of Kevin was talking about, ourselves, we do, you know, in the financials, a reconciliation between the weighted average. You know, we take the profit before tax of each subsidiary we have at the nominal tax rate of a country. So we've got a weighted average rate, you know, for the group that we compare to the effective tax rate. And we analyze, you know, the difference, like, you know, the tax planning ideas or withholding taxes on distribution. So I think it's very easily done. And from a geographical point of view, it does not create any difficulty. To split taxes by segment, I think that's much more complicated. And Maria addressed it. You know, she said, well, we do it by segment, but there is a column in corporate, you know. I think it would be, for us, very difficult to allocate, you know, the tax planning ideas or, you know, withholding taxes on internal distribution. You know, there are a number of issues which basically, you know, cannot be attributed, or you have some allocation rules, which are what they are. But allocation to segment, it's a much more complicated story. There is a point that we look also, which is not in, maybe it's indirectly, in you know, on page 10, it's the impact on capital employed and working capital. Because, you know, in the statement of cash flow, taxes, it's linked to cash tax paid, but the information is not direct. But taxes can have a significant impact from one year to another on capital employed and working capital requirements. So that's something also we look at internally.
Thanks. Malcolm?
So I think we were focused on answering slide 14 questions. I fully endorse what Jack has just said, that the allocation to segments is in many cases complicated. It's really driven by the group structure. It might be if you've got for every segment a single legal entity, you can determine it. But if you don't have that, then you are really having problems, because you get then into an issue of an allocation within one legal entity. The other area which makes it very complex is taxes driven by debt equity structures of companies, and whether, say, something is interest deductible or not. And that's nothing to do, at least in the way we look at our segment information, that structural issue has nothing to do with segments. That's a pure corporate area that would not be allocated. So I would not be in favour of pushing for allocation tax by segment. Now, perhaps if I can just take, you also ask, what information about income tax do you need? So I'm going to be very provocative here, is that we need very little information on deferred tax. So, I don't know, so slide 7, I don't know, you know, I think there are grounds for a fundamental look at what we're trying to achieve with deferred tax. And you've got a lot of saying, of course, this is a long-term project. I think that's a bad premise. I think you should put it as a accelerated project.
I think what we appreciate today using the deferred tax is that the fact we have in the same year the results before tax and the corresponding tax. Even if those tax are paid next year or even whatever, but the fact that P&L is visible net of that of debt is something that is appreciated today. In most of the case, it is possible to do it with the standard that it is today. If we accept that sometimes different past assets and liabilities do not fit the definition of assets and liabilities, but if it's still as it is, it will be a good representation of what it should be. Except for some industries when the elimination of the margin on inventories is used with the tax of the seller, and which is a real problem for some industries, pharmacy,
and it's probably with IP, which I'm saying.
But not on the only one. And this point has been solved by a specific exception, I would say, given by the GESGA. And this exception does not exist in IFRS. And I think it's really needed.
Well, the
FASB
have just actually issued
an exposure draft. Yes, because the result of that is that Malcolm will say better than I do, the financial statement of pharmaceutical and some industries goes up and down with no reason, I would say, no economic reason.
But you asked Pat earlier today the difference between US GAAP and IFRS. I mean, be careful, this is publicly recorded, but you know, this is a fundamental difference which, you know, makes certain people think whether I first got the right answer.
Okay.
Well, one point I would like to highlight that intercompany issue. This is a result of current temporary difference approach, but if we take other approach, like
yes,
income approach, deferred tax would not be recognized for intercompany.
Exactly.
That's why we are
considering whether. If you want to achieve the same standard and just say we just need a small specific amendment, I would say, can be done with the acceptance of the reception and we do it.
Yeah, and I don't know why that hasn't been on your agenda. We talked about it 10 or more years.
Let's move on.
Well, actually, just to follow up on that, I mean, it was in the project that was being discussed to update IS-12 about 5 years ago. And at that stage, the board decided to speak to it.
Yes, but it was part of a global project.
It was.
Their proposition is not to change the standards today, just to make the small amendment.
But it is a friction point between US GAAP proposal and
yeah, that was what I was trying to get at. Not necessarily open up another convergence project with the FASB, but where are there differences that continue to be thorny?
I know there's certainly more.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to the next
from slide 15 to 18, those are the areas that you highlighted that Senate heard improvement. Slide 15 are some of the areas that you highlighted where guidance are needed. For example, you have just mentioned about the tax rate reconciliation. And it is also the area where users told us that it is very difficult for them to understand about the tax rate used in for the tax reconciliation. And the research project will go further to identify similar areas where improvement is requested by both preparers and users of the financial statements. And slide 16 are some disclosures which some of you deleted that are not used by investors while you need a lot of effort to prepare those information. But to the contrary, what we heard from investors are they request for more information on these areas. Our research project will explore more to identify whether these requirements are really redundant or actually it is insufficient. And apart from the lack of guidance and possible redundant disclosures, as shown in slide 18, it's a few of the problems that you highlight here, which we start think that it might be these problems may be rooted to the underlying principle of the standards. One is you have just mentioned is the tax effect of the unrealized intercompany property inventory, and the other one is about the that way obtain intangible assets in a business combination. We have two questions related to these slides. First is, are these problems list from slide 15 to 18 a fair reflection of your concerns about accounting for income taxes? Or are, what other areas you think improvement is needed? And another question is, do you recommend us to focus on the narrow scope amendments to solve problems based on slides 15 to 17? Or do you think we should consider fundamental and think of the center affects potential fundamental problems with on slide 18?
Any comments, Kevin?
The users, and I'll be rude here, the paranoia with the tax consequence of remitting cash, are they trying to get an allocation of deferred tax between short and long term? Because if I've got to remit, if I have unremitted foreign earnings and I'm going to remit them, I've already got deferred tax already. So do they want that allocated to being current and short? Because otherwise, if there's no tax consequence, well, then there's no deferred tax, and therefore it's not an issue. So is it that they just don't understand the deferred tax accounting? You know, I don't, you know, this came up in the net debt reconciliation, it comes up again. Yeah, what is it that they don't get?
Well, when we talked to CMAQ members last Friday, what they said was that they think tax information is a black box, but they do use certain information to estimate future tax cash flows. And they think they use information differently for short term and long term. For short term, they think it will be more projections, so they want more accurate, precise information, whereas on long term, they basically think that there are so much uncertainty, so they want more standards or statutory tax rate information.
Well, to continue on this question, I think we need really they need to explain clearly what they want, because basically dividend policy within the group is not set up forever. It depends on the taxes, it depends on the level of investments you will make in a country. So basically, the tax consequences of it can depend on interest rate and variation of interest rates. So there are plenty of factors which impact your distribution policy within a group. So basically, to disclose the tax consequences of remitting cash from the subs, for me, it's a meaningless information, because as Kevin says, either you have decided to distribute the cash and then you've booked the related income tax. If you have not decided, again, what you will decide in the future will depend on a number of factors that maybe you do not even know yourself. So I do not know exactly on the long term what they try to measure.
My sense is that what they're trying to do is, first of all, understand whether there are tax consequences. So that's the kind of initial barrier. Is it just sitting there forever, or is it freely available?
Peter, on this one, they've got the information in the tax reconciliation. You just measure, you just indicate what is the cost of withholding taxes. You've got an internal distribution. So they know, at least in our case, they know how much it costs, an effective tax rate, the fact of repatriating money. So this number, this information, they have it. The only question would be, could there be in the future a significant change in the dividend policy of the group which could impact what you are doing today? That would be for me.
I'm not sure that the effect on the current year in the reconciliation is going to give them enough granularity to work out what the effect might be on the pot that's sitting there.
The other question is whether this is the right standard to take a look at this issue, because the other way that people think about it is that you accept consolidated financial statements, you consolidate the cash down to one number, and it all looks as if it's the same. And, go back to the point we had earlier about you've got cash sitting in a country and in a currency where the official rate is quite a lot different to the rate you can pull it out, or you've got some restrictions. and we just treat this being the same. So you can have, it's not just tax, and the difficulty is this, that you could work out theoretically what tax you'd have to pay if you pulled it over now, but most people would say, well, I'm not going to, so that's meaningless anyway, because I'd expect to spend money back in the country and so on. So there's a question about whether you quantify this or whether what people are actually asking for is more of an assessment of are there some sort of restrictions, be they currency, all sorts of things that say aggregating this down to one number is over aggregating. So that's that.
Just a supplement. The person who require information for tax consequence within cash is more of a credit side analyst who wants to understand how much money company can pay, whereas equity side analyst has more interest in tax rate because they apply tax rates to future cash flow to come up with a discounted cash flow numbers.
Yeah, but you can also decide to use the cash where it is. You reinvest your cash in the country where it is, and then you do not pay the tax.
So, coming to slide 18, which is me coming from Canada, we have invested in, we really do feel that should be fixed. In fact, before I came here, I shared with my CFO correspondence that I had with, from 10 years ago, with Brian Carlsberg and Lisa O'Connor at the time. Some 5 years ago, we orchestrated a letter to David Tweedy, signed by all of the CFOs of the European pharma industry, that this really needed to be fixed. Coming back from this meeting, my CFO is expecting, although he computed nasty here, he would like to have positive news, although in view of the other battle I was fighting for last year, he's perhaps on Venezuela. He's perhaps
he's going to be talking against the pot.
He's not
going
to be talking. So, highly likely, since he's paying a lot of interest in this, if you don't move fast forward and promise something, you will be getting another letter from the European pharma industry that you have to fix this issue. But it is frustrating. That would be three letters in something like 12 years.
But it's not just the unrealized intercompany profits, it's the change in accounting policies in equity accounted entities, because you get the deferred tax consequence in that as well. But I'm going to get the dividends out of that equity accounted entity, and those deferred tax is never going to occur. It's another funny adjustment.
So you picked the right things.
Peter, did you say that what FASB is moving towards, where we are here?
There's something exposure drop.
Yeah, so they're converging. So we don't want to change.
They won't admit it, though.
They're foolish if they're converging. Well, they think it's simplification. Well, there's good simplification, then there's bad simplification.
Yeah, reallocation of deferred tax based on the underlying assets is we're simplifying the deferred tax. No, it's IFRS.
And this is one area in our tax rate that is so much. It's a pretty ridiculous thing.
Okay, then thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your important comments. We are taking the account to comment in the project for the part.